Wingstings Podcast, episode 28. We're going to take a look at the Packers here. We are in the beginning of July 2019. So at some point, take a look maybe briefly at what we think of the 2019 season. And by we, I mean my father, Greg, will join me to discuss a list that we've been talking about a little bit off the air. It's a book that I am going to give him for a present, although he knows he's getting it, the 50 Greatest Packer Players in Green Bay Packers history. That's not the actual wording of the book, so don't look it up that way. If I can just click over to Amazon, because I don't prepare for my own podcast. The 50 Greatest Players in Green Bay Packers History is the book. Robert W. Cohen is the author. We'll call him Bob when he joins us here momentarily. Bob's an interesting guy. You know, he writes these books. He's a historian. We'll get into that with him about it's not like a Packer fan writing this book. So it's not like he's like, oh, Brett Favre's won, Aaron Rodgers, best Packer of all time. He's taking it at a different sort of, you know, just a historical perspective to see who the 50 greatest Packers are. And sometimes when we talk to my dad, a fan, we'll take a look at if that's a difference or not. And then I got to talk to my dad about a couple other things Packer related to how he got me into the Packers. And then if my name is really Bart for Bart Starr, because I'm not a Bartholomew, I'm just Bart. And I always tell people I'm named after Bart Starr, but I think that over time I've convinced my parents to be convinced of that. Because I don't think they told me I was named after Bart Starr until I asked them if I was named after Bart Starr. And I was like 18 when that happened. Don't you think that I would have known by now, especially if I was a Packer fan that grew up watching games with my dad? So we'll talk to him coming up. But first, we do want to dig into this book, The 50 Greatest Packers. Nope. The 50 Greatest Players in Green Bay Packers History, here on the 28th episode of the Wingstings Podcast. Available radio.com, at 105.7 FM The Fan, at Wings Podcast, and 105.7fmthefan.com. Bob Cohen joins us here on the Wingstings Podcast. In the book, it's the 50 Greatest Players in Green Bay Packers History. Bart Starr's on the cover. I obviously love Bart Starr, with my name being Bart, which a little bit later I'll try to grill my dad once and for all, because Bob, my name's Bart, and I'm named after Bart Starr, is what I think the story is. For a long time, they wouldn't really tell me, and then I said, I'm named after Bart Starr, right? And they go, sure, So I'm gonna put him to the task today. But he is definitely on this list where you compile the 50 greatest Packers of all time. The list goes Don Hutson, you've got Brett Favre at 2, Forrest Gregg, Ray Nitschke, Aaron Rodgers. Bart Starr comes in at 8. Now, this is a list I'm sure you know when you put this together that there's going to be some debate on this. How did you come up with the list that you finally decided on, Bob?
Well, in the beginning, going into the whole procedure, I kind of had an idea who the best majority of players would be, but as I did my research, the rankings changed quite a bit. But I kind of knew Don Hutson and Brett Favre would be my top two. And then after that, it was kind of tough to figure out who would be the next group, because Packers had so many great players through the years. But in formulating my rankings, I used a number of criteria, the most important of which was the level of dominance each player reached during his time in Green Bay. And I have to stress that I only viewed a player during the time he spent with the Packers. So in other words, a player such as Reggie White finished, I think, 12th, if I'm not mistaken. And, of course, if you look at his whole entire career, he might be the greatest player ever to play for the Packers. But I only looked at a player's time in Green Bay when I formulated my rankings. So I try to ascertain the level of dominance each player reached during his years with the Packers. I looked at the number of All-Pro selections he had, the number of Pro Bowls he appeared in, the level of statistical compilation he obtained during his statistical categories most pertinent to his position, and the overall influence he had on the team and the positive impact he made on the performance of the team.
Don Hutson, number one, Favre, two. Was there a gap there between one and two, a pretty big gap, or what was it that put Don Hutson at number one on this list? Because this list is just, you know how many Hall of Famers they have. They've been around for so long, the 13 world championships. How does Don Hutson become number one?
Well, when doing my research, I just feel that he was the first. He's generally recognized to be the first truly great wide receiver in the National Football League, and he changed his sport much as Babe Ruth changed baseball. He just transform the game into a from a predominantly running game into a passing game. And he was he dominated the statistical categories for wide receivers throughout his entire career. He led the NFL in every major statistical category multiple times, like 8 or 9 times in yards and catches, touchdown receptions. And Peter King, that noted football columnist, says he might be the greatest player ever to play the game, period. He ranks him up there with above Jerry Rice as his greatest receiver of all time. So I kind of feel that there was a little bit of a gap there between him and Brett Favre.
You've done a couple of these books now, the Packers book. I know you've done a couple other football ones with the Patriots, Giants, working on some other ones, and then some baseball ones, which we'll talk about too before we're done. But when you're comparing these players, like Don Hutson to Jerry Rice is a good comparison, or even when we talk about the quarterbacks, Bart Starr to Aaron Rodgers, how hard is it? Because football has changed so much. I mean, if you've been watching since the 60s and this game started in the late teens and it's completely different 100 years later as they celebrate their 100th anniversary of the NFL, how hard is it to take a look at Don Hutson and try to compare him to a game that's almost, I mean, it's different. It's very different from when he played.
It's completely different. In fact, it's completely different now than it was 30 years ago because the game has experienced an offensive explosion because so many rules have been put in place to protect the quarterback and the wide receivers. The defensive backs are barely allowed to touch to touch wide receivers anymore, and quarterbacks recorded far more protection than they ever were before. So you can't even really compare a Joe Montana to a Tom Brady or a Brett Favre to a Tom Brady. It's really difficult. So when you compare someone like Jerry Rice to Don Hutson, yeah, it's very, very hard. You just have to kind of look at the level of dominance each player attained during his era, and that's really the only way you can look at it.
I think with quarterbacks, that's a big one too, because this franchise has been blessed with the three that pop off the page, the Bart Starr, Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre, and there's that now iconic picture of the three of them, which I think is a great gift, along with this book by Bob Cohen here. Make sure you pick it up whenever you're listening. It's always a great gift, especially because I saw this book and it was the first person I thought of was my dad, because I, you know, you struggle with people and what to get them for gifts, but to read about the history of the Packers is always a good idea. When you look at these three quarterbacks, Starr, Favre, and Rodgers, was there much of a difference between those three for you? And with Rodgers' career being unfinished, is taking over for Favre on this list, is that something that you see as an eventual outcome?
Well, to address the first part of your question, there is a significant difference in the talent level of each man. A lot of Packer fans love Bart Starr, and they feel that he maybe should be number one because of all the championships he led the Packers to, but he's generally considered to be far less talented than even some of the quarterbacks who played in his era, such as Johnny Unitas. He had certain qualities and tremendous leadership qualities and other intangibles that made him an exceptional quarterback. But when it comes to sheer talent, he doesn't compare to either Aaron Rodgers or Brett Favre. That's why I have him at number 8. Between Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre, I had to put Favre ahead of him because he's the more accomplished quarterback, but I feel that Aaron Rodgers is a better, more talented quarterback, and by the time his career is over, I believe he will a very good possibility he will have surpassed Brett Favre on this list and probably moved into the number 2 position.
Another thing I saw interesting with this list too was at 10, and I don't know if I mentioned this yet, but James Lofton comes in at 10. Now, when I start to, was I born in 84, so that's when Lofton would have been about playing, and the first memories I have of the Packers are Sterling Sharp and, you know, Don Majkowski, and then Favre coming in. And I think that the Packers have had some good receivers over the last few years with Jordy Nelson and Greg Jennings and Devontae Adams now. I feel like James Lofton's career almost gets kind of ignored because the Packers were so bad then. Just like I feel like people that are getting into the Packers now, maybe Sterling Sharp's career gets forgotten because he was so good, but then he got injured, and that is kind of, you know, a forgotten time right before the Super Bowl. James Lofton at number 10, just how good, Bob, from your research, was he in a Packer uniform?
Well, I saw him play, and he was a tremendous athlete and receiver, period. In fact, he's the greatest receiver in my lifetime that the Packers have had. And he actually retired with having surpassed Don Hutson in the record books among all NFL wide receivers. So that's how good he was. Great speed, great hands, great athletic ability. He had it all.
Now, when you're writing these books, you've watched football for a long time. Is it you're from the New York area, so you probably watched a lot of Giants growing up? Is that right?
Yeah, Giants, and I've even seen the Jets quite a bit, although I have spent most of my life rooting for the Giants, but I also rooted for the Packers for quite a time as well.
How do you, two parts of that when you do your research, how do you immerse yourself into a fan base to really try to, you know, you're trying to figure out who these guys are going to be so that fans of the team can look at the rankings. And even if we say, oh, Forrest Gregg should be ahead of Favre, or even if we say Ray Nitschke shouldn't be ahead of Rodgers, when you look at the list, I mean, these are all the names that you would expect to be in the top 10 with Herb Adderley, Willie Davis, these guys. How do you make sure that when you're doing your research, you do right by the fans that will be reading the book? And how hard is it to make sure you get that done?
Well, for one thing, I try to remain totally impartial when I write any of these books. For example, I did a 50 Greatest Dallas Cowboys book, and I happen to dislike the Dallas Cowboys very much.
But they buy books, I bet you.
Yeah, but I'm very impartial, and I look at things totally objectively. Then I also realize that fans of all generations will hopefully be reading my books, so I try not to cater to one specific group, and I just look at each player within the context of the era in which he played and the level of dominance he reached during that era. So I try to, I realize there are some fans, some younger fans will be reading my books and saying, who is this guy? I never heard of him before. But you try to not only inform but and entertain, but you educate as well.
When you write the baseball versions of this book, and again, the 50 greatest players in Green Bay Packers history, you've written a couple, if I'm not mistaken, Yankees, Cardinals, Red Sox. What's the difference when you're doing this book and trying to look at it from a baseball perspective to a football perspective? Like, is one sport easier to do to rank 50 from a team, or is it tougher? How do you go through that process?
Well, I wouldn't say one is easier than another, but probably slightly more difficult to do football because baseball, the statistics, is more of a direct correlation. I mean, the game has changed through the years, but not as much, I don't think, as football has. Because the athletes are so much. I think football is based much more on natural athletic ability, and the athletes have gotten so much better through the years that I think it affects football players more, the rankings more. But my mindset varies because the first few books I did were actually baseball books. As you mentioned, I did the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Cardinals. I've also done the Giants and the Dodgers and Detroit Tigers. And after I did those baseball books, I really started getting into the football books. So you have to use a different mindset. The research is done differently. So once I'm in that mindset for that particular sport, it's much easier to do my research and use my methodology as far as actually ranking the players.
If you ever do a book on the Brewers, I'll lend a hand, because if you're going to try to get the 50, you might have to change that to the 20 greatest,
or even the
15.
I don't expect to ever do a book on the Brewers, but I may one day do a book on the Braves, and of course they spent a lot of years in Milwaukee, so that might be one you might be interested in.
Yeah, the 10 years that the Braves were here far outweighed any success the 45 years that the Brewers have had, so that might be a tough one to do. So
yeah, two straight pennants in one World Series.
Right? I know. Hey, settle an argument for me just while I have you here that we talk about on the show. Do you have any idea how, because we've, for whatever reason, on the morning show that I do, Chuck and Winkler on the Fan, when we get into an argument, Chuck's probably 52. I mean, so we're kind of still. I don't know how good, would Babe Ruth have been good in today's game? Is he that good that he'd still be good in today's game, do you think?
Well, I think there's probably some people who scoff at the notion that he would be great.
I'm one of them.
I personally take the attitude that although the level of dominance might be different, a great player in one era would be a great player in any era. I don't think he would be as dominant as he was when he played, but I still think he was one of the... put it this way, if I was ranking my greatest baseball players of all time, he'd still be number one. Even though I don't think his level of dominance would be the same as it is now, as it was when he played. But keep in mind also, even though he wasn't the greatest athlete in the world, he would be able to take advantage of the different things they have now that they didn't have when he played. So, you could say he's actually smaller than a lot of the players that play today. But, if he was living today, who knows what he'd be like? It's really hard to say.
It is. It's so impossible. And this is a lot of what sports radio, has dived into, especially with, I think, the hottest one right now is, well, maybe Brady Montana comes up a lot during the Super Bowl runs. But LeBron and Michael Jordan, it's so hard to compare these guys in different eras. And maybe that's the fun of it, Bob, is the fun of it is there is no answer. We'll never know the answer, so we might as well just argue about it.
Yeah, the way I look at it in baseball, you have to judge a player within the context of the era in which he played, more so than in football and basketball. Because there are definitely basketball players who played 40 years ago who wouldn't be able to be nearly as effective as they were. If they play today, like Bill Russell, as great as he was, I can't see him playing against. It would be really hard for him to guard someone like Shaquille O'Neal. It's just so much bigger and stronger.
The list for the Packers again, for the 50 greatest Packers, we've got Don Hutson at 1, Brett Favre at 2, Forrest Gregg at 3, Ray Nitschke 4, Aaron Rodgers 5, Herb Adderley 6, Jim Taylor 7, Bart Starr 8, Willie Davis 9, 10 is James Lofton. I'll be debating those, like I told you, with my dad in a little bit. But I think it is interesting, at least for the Packers' point of view, and most of these teams that you've done books on, if you're going to get even to number 50 on this list, Bob, it's going to be tough because who did you have on there currently? I think Clay Matthews was somewhere in the teens.
I have him at 17, if I'm not mistaken.
The history is so vast that you really have to have a good career. I mean, like a Devontae Adams. He's going to have a few more good years, I think, to even maybe sniff the top 50, and he could be one of the best receivers in the game, but the history of the Packers is so strong.
Yeah, they had so many players in the Hall of Fame. I did a couple of these other books where players who made the top 10 wouldn't even make my top 25 in the Packers book. I mean, they're really tremendous history on this team. And that's what I try to do with most of these books. I try to The teams I usually select are some of the most iconic franchises in the history of pro sports. So I've done the Packers and in baseball I've done the Yankees and the Red Sox, teams like that. That's why I would probably never do one on the Milwaukee Brewers, just because they're not really an iconic franchise.
What would you be more likely to do one on, the Brewers or, let's say, the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Actually, to be totally honest, neither one. some of the books that I have planned, I'm actually beginning work now on a Chicago Bears book. And I know that they're hated rivals of the Packers, but they are also one of the most iconic franchises in pro sports. And two books I have coming out at the start of this upcoming football season are 50 Greatest Eagles and 50 Greatest Steelers. And you want to talk about teams with a lot of great players, those Steelers. I mean, there's a veritable list of Hall of Famers right there. So I would say they're right there with the Packers as far as great players.
Yeah, that should be an interesting one. Again, the 50 greatest players in Green Bay Packers history. I mean, if you just go to Amazon and find it, you can buy it, and then all your other books will start popping up. So it's really easy to see and bundle some of those together. I am interested when you do the Bears one, who you put as their top quarterback, because they have not had a lot of good ones. And you could even make a case that maybe Jay Cutler is the best Bears quarterback of all time.
Well, Jay Cutler has the best statistics, but that doesn't necessarily make him the best quarterback because of the year he's playing. And there's only one Bears quarterback that I would say could really be considered an elite quarterback, and that was Sid Luckman, who quarterbacked the team to their multiple championships during the 1940s in the famous 73-0 win over the Washington Redskins. The only other quarterback who made my top 50 on the Bears was Jim McMahon. He barely made it because of the influence he had on those Bears teams, but he was not really a great quarterback.
I always love when I want to make a Bears fan angry, I tell him that Jim McMahon has won as many Super Bowls with the Bears as he has with the Packers, being a backup on that 96 team. So that's always a good way to put a little jab into him. Robert, it's a great book. It's a great gift. Appreciate some time from you. Look forward to the ones coming out and look forward to maybe looking back at some of the ones you've done and the baseball ones I'm curious about. Because I'm in a phase right now where I've got all these baseball cards in my house and I'm going through them. And it's crazy how much I learned from that. And even now where I am as an adult, how much I'm still learning about the game based on that. And I think that those have been a good tool for me. And these books could be a good tool for people coming up that want to know more about the history of some of these games. So keep up the good work on the project.
Have you been a Brewers fan all your life?
Okay, so yes, but I grew up, the first team I liked was the Cubs, living in Wisconsin. The Cubs were on TV a lot more than the Brewers. So I liked the Cubs, and then I quit baseball in 94 because of the strike. Completely got me out of it. I'm 10 years old. I hate it. I don't understand it. The home run chase actually brought me back in, so I give a major pass to the steroids era because if without that, I'm not watching baseball. You're not a fan of that era?
No. As a matter of fact, I think it's a farce that Bud Selig was elected to the Hall of Fame. I think he's the worst commissioner we've ever had. But
well, I just like that I like baseball again. So it's fine. I just like that I like baseball again. But then when I got back into baseball, it was the Brewers and they had the new park, and so switching of the leagues, I certainly do not like the Chicago Cubs like I did when I was a kid. Appreciate it. It was good chatting with you, and we'll have to find a reason to do this again sometime in the future.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it.
So that list again, Don Hudson, Brett Favre, Forrest Gregg, Ray Nitschke, Aaron Rodgers, Herb Adderley, Jim Taylor, Bart Starr, Willie Davis, James Lofton, as I bring in somebody who has been a Packer fan since about the 60s as well, and that is my father, Greg. Hey, Dad.
How's it going?
Good. I remember, and I want to make sure that if we're going to talk Packers history that I talk to you, because I do remember vividly Super Bowl 45 when the Packers won and I was crying at a now defunct bar in Fond du Lac, and I said, thank you for making me a Packers fan. I don't know if I've announced it in public yet, but I'm about to have a kid. I actually have been dropping hints on the air.
Oh, have you?
Well, I just flat out said today, paternity leave's coming up, and what was the other thing I said? Oh, my wife's baby shower, but I haven't like said, everybody, I've got an announcement coming up, I'm having a child. But I'm having a son, and you know, if he doesn't like sports, whatever, but I would like to at least give him the taste of liking the Packers. How important was it for you to make sure that we liked the Packers?
I think it was a big part of me growing up with my dad, and sports is a great connection. And you know, there's not a whole lot else in Wisconsin, especially back then. You know, the other teams weren't. I mean, the Bucks were good back in the 70s, and everybody stopped. Like, there was nothing else going on when I was a young child. On Sundays, like, stores were closed, the Packer game came on, we'd get home from church as fast as possible so that we could get the game at noon, and it was a big part of my life, and then a good time to be, like, with my dad or with my brother. And then when you guys started popping into the picture, it was like, it was important for me to watch the Packer games, not a lot to do in Wisconsin, and having you guys watch the games and get excited about the Packers and football, that was important. And it was a good, you know, it's a good family time.
Did we ever like appear like we weren't going to get into it, or were we into it right away?
No, I think you guys were into it right away. Like, we played a lot of football, and even when you're little, like, they'd give you a little football and you'd have to run to the couch or something and tackle you. And I mean, it was just something that I think most kids in Wisconsin just grow up watching football on Sundays, and the Packers were good, and you were fortunate. The Packers were good when you were growing up, and you like watching teams when they're successful, and you just, every one of you, like, wanted to watch it and spend time together watching the games.
So it's like a brainwash thing.
Yeah, it probably is, but. You know, you always had the option to go do something else. Like, I didn't force you. We didn't tie you to a chair so that you'd go.
Well, yeah, fine. But you, I mean, we know what the end result wanted to be. So then for fatherly advice, like, I'm obviously, it would be great if my son was as into these sports as I am. And if he's not, again, that's fine. But if I want him to be, or if I should, do you think that I should? Because we didn't, like, you and I didn't watch a lot of Brewers together, and we didn't come down for a lot of games because they were bad and they weren't on TV a lot. And the Bucks, I mean, I don't even think you cared about the Bucks in the 90s.
Well, yeah, I didn't care about the Bucks in the 90s, but I was really, it's different. Like I was really busy. You're really busy with your, there are four of you and you were all active in different things. So, sitting down, watching a baseball game, at night, you know, most of those games, if they were on, they were on at night. Going to the park with four kids, you know, a family of six, wasn't affordable to do it a lot. The Bucks was even harder. It was harder to get a Bucks to get a, you know, take a family to a Bucks game. And then we had so many activities going on, but you know, football was in Sunday afternoon, and we didn't have a lot of, like our soccer was busy in the summertime, but not in the fall and winter on Sundays. So, you know, and the weather's not good enough to do much else. So you sit down and you watch the games, and you know, and I don't think it's something that you force on them. You're just watching the games, and you know, you're playing a little catch, and you're playing little games with your little guy, and then they start liking it, and they start, you know, wanting to be like you, you know, that when they're little, they want to do things that dad's doing. And I think that as long as you're not like throwing things at the TV and, you know, getting hyper upset,
getting drunk on Twitter,
Yeah. You know, as long as it's time you're also spending with them. And you're not just like, get out of the room, I'm watching a game kind of thing. I don't think you force them. They want to be by their dad, and they want to know what he likes, and until they make up their own minds and want to do something different, you know. But by then you get hooked, you know, like you get hooked on those sport teams.
Well, if my gateway was the Packers, I found my way to Brewers and Bucks. So maybe I just gateway him, or I don't want to like give him too much at one time.
No, but I think if your interest, like you were with your baseball thing, I think my dad or your grandpa liked the Brewers, but you played baseball a little bit when you were little and you liked it. And you didn't continue with it because we made you choose a sport, and we just had too many things going on, but you still liked baseball. And I don't know if your brothers are really into baseball, but none of them really played T-ball. You know, you set the soccer.
Yeah, I like it a lot more than any of them.
Yeah. They never got into it. But, you know, basketball, I didn't even watch a lot of basketball. You know, my basketball interest was college, and then, you know, until Brett went to work for a team, like, I followed them, but it wasn't like I had to see what was going on. You know, like I liked the Bulls when Jordan was playing, and I liked the Bucks when Kareem and Oscar Robinson were playing. And, you know, and I took some school kids to Bucks games occasionally on class field trips, but, you know, it was nothing like I had to know what the score was the next day. But the Packers, that was totally different. You know, there was, I think, the emotional bond you build watching the team and then being close to your family. And there weren't that many games, you know. So they were events, you know. They were, hey, this is our Sunday afternoon. We're grilling burgers and watching the Packers, you know.
I remember a game they lost, Dad, that Brett and I were so upset that we both, like, we got in a fight and we both went to our rooms. And you were trying to yell at us that it was only a game, but there's got to be some of you that like is proud that we're that mad that the Packers lost.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like a double-edged sword there, because you know that the Packers mean a lot to you, but then as you age, like as I remember a kid in college, I went to college and the Packers would play. They were bad back in the 80s, late 70s, 80s. They were terrible, and this kid, he was a friend of the group we were with. And if the Packers lost, or when they lost on Sunday, that guy, he could hardly come out of his room until Wednesday. Like, he was just devastated. And I think that maybe all that losing, because when I grew up, they were winning all the time. And then we went through a long period of time where they didn't. And it was like, I don't want to be that vested in a game anymore. You know, like, I have a hard time, especially being in Florida, and it's beautiful all the time, sitting down on a Sunday afternoon when it's 80 degrees outside and you can go do something, and then you watch the Packers play for 3.5 hours and they get beat. And it's like, oh my God, I just wasted, 3.5 hours, you know, because, and I shouldn't feel that way, but, you want to see him win, and you want to, you know, that's the thing. Like, we get invested in, and they know that, like, the sports teams know that. That's why they make all that money, because they.
That's why I paid $250 for a piece of paper.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Actually, my wife bought it, but still. So I'm talking to Bob Cohen, this author here, for his 50 Greatest book list. And now, he was interesting because at first when I saw the book, I thought, oh, he's a Packer diehard. He writes a Packer book. No, he's more of a historian. Grew up in the New York area, so, like, watched the Giants and Jets growing up. Always watched the Packers. But so he can look at this list from, like, an untainted eye, I guess. His list goes Don Hutson at 1, and he said it wasn't close. And then he goes Favre at 2, Forrest Gregg at 3, Ray Nitschke 4, Aaron Rodgers at 5. Hutson, Favre, Gregg, Nitschke, Rodgers. Does that work for you, or do you not? Do you think there's something?
Yeah,
different?
You know, I mean, you have to go back and read about Don Hutson, because that's before even my time. But I asked some guy the other day, because you said that you were going to call me about this, and I said, so who do you think the greatest Packer was? And this guy is from Cuba. He's probably in his mid to later 60s. And he was, he came over, he's like an orphan baby, and he lives in Miami. He's a Miami guy, but he grew up in Green Bay because they came over on some Peter Pan thing when they were kids. And he grew up in Green Bay, and that first person out of his mouth was Don Hutson. So, I would have to agree with that. I think those top five are all pretty good. They all belong there. Reggie had a huge impact. He's probably in the top 10, I would think. Right?
He went Herb Adderley, Jim Taylor, Bart Starr, Willie Davis, James Lofton, and then Reggie at 12. And then he said, because he's just basing him on their time as a Packer, which I guess maybe I'll call him back here when I'm done, but you would think that Reggie's impact was more than James Lofton. I was surprised to see James Lofton in the top 10 because I don't really know much about his time in Green Bay.
Yeah, James Lofton, I don't know if he's top 10. But, you know, like, I was a big Carroll Dale fan back in the day, and I think Lofton was a fantastic receiver. I think the only slight on James was the altercation or the incident he had towards the end of his career, off the field incident. But from a player standpoint, he was phenomenal. Those other guys, Herb Adderley and all those guys from the championship years, they definitely belong there. They won, what did they win, 5, 6 championships in a row or whatever it was. I think he did a pretty good job. And to put Brett Favre up there, like, that's a no-brainer. I thought maybe Bart Starr would be a little bit higher, but from a pure numbers and, you know.
Numbers, like, impact, achievements.
Yeah, yeah, I think that he did a pretty good job.
Is Favre, Rodgers, Starr the right order?
I think that by the time Rodgers is done, I think that, I don't know. I guess I think Rodgers is going to surpass Favre in all the numerical categories, but I think Favre's impact in turning us around, turning the losing around, probably puts him ahead of those other two. Bart Starr was phenomenal. I mean, he's been my idol or my hero forever, and it had to do a lot with just the way he could lead and the way he was off the field as well. Like, that guy was like the moral compass for everybody. You know, he he was a special person. But if you're looking at just football, I think Brett Favre came in and got the franchise back to where it should be. And then, you know, then he puts us in a position where we can draft Aaron Rodgers and let him develop and not have to get him, you know, shellacked in the first 2 years, and maybe he doesn't turn into the quarterback he is. But he's, you know, he got his play inspired Reggie to come here. You know, like, I think that he definitely belongs there.
When people ask me if I was named after Bart Starr, I tell them, I think my parents named him after some guy they knew, but I've convinced them to let me think that I was. What's the truth?
The truth is that, yes, Bart, you're named after Bart Starr.
No.
The guy that you knew, that we knew, he kept telling everybody that we named him after him. There's no way I'm naming you after some random guy. I mean,
if you like the name enough.
Yeah, well, no, but the name was good, but it was, Bart Starr was, I'm telling you, like, he was the guy that, he was the guy back then. Like, if you wanted to have a role model for anybody, like, you want your kid to have a role model and it's not you, like, it's, Bart Starr was the guy. Like, he was a rock, and he was just a, like, community wise and his public persona and the things he did on and off the field. Like, he was class. He was a class act.
By the way, this is a good time to bring up this that I just saw this morning. Corey Behnke, one of the guys at CheeseheadTV.com, tweeted that the Packers should actually have 14 world titles and not 13. Have you ever heard this story?
No, where's the fourth? What's the 14th?
1932. Because in 1932, the Bears were 6-1-6, okay?
Yeah.
The Portsmouth Spartans were 6-1-4. So if you're 6-1-6, what do you think your winning percentage should be? 6-1-6.
I don't know. What is it? It's like.
Well, what do you do with like the ties?
It would be like you were 9-4.
Yeah, that's what it should be.
Yeah, it'd be like you're 9-4 then.
So the NFL didn't start doing that until 1972. So for the Bears at 6-1-6, they basically just said you're 6-1.
And
Portsmouth, they said you're 6-1. And the Packers that year finished 10-3-1. So even though the Packers had more wins than losses than the other teams, and their differential should be better, less ties, what they did was they gave Chicago and Portsmouth a winning percentage of .857, and the Packers, they gave them like .750 or so. That .750, because the tie doesn't change it too much, should be better than what the Spartans or the Bears were. So technically, with today's rules, the Packers should have a 14th title.
Yeah, you're right. They should have a 14th.
How old were you during
Take it away from the Bears.
How old were you during the first Super Bowls? Like 7?
Okay, so my earliest memory of the Packers, my earliest memory was, I believe it was 65 the first Super Bowl or 66?
66 season.
Okay, I remember the NFL, that Super Bowl. So I remember the NFL championship game when...
Or 67?
When the Packers played the Chiefs. So was that 66?
I think 67. I'm looking through my book of cards. I got all my Packer cards here that actually are mine, Brett's, and yours that I just kind of taken.
Yeah, well, somebody has to. Somebody has to.
Would you like a Mike Douglas 82 tops?
Mike Douglas.
He was an outside linebacker.
Yeah, I remember Mike Douglas.
How about George Cumbie?
George Cumbie, yes.
What was he?
What was he? I don't know. Was he a defender? Linebacker?
Yeah, inside linebacker.
Inside linebacker.
Gail Gillingham?
He's a tackle, isn't he? Or guard?
Guard.
Guard.
So, yeah, all right. So your first Super Bowl, you were like 6, 7, 8, 9, 6, 4.
Yeah, I was 5 or 6. I remember sitting in front of the black and white TV and the cars came out. They had cars that had big helmets on them. And they came out, like, so it was the Packer helmet and the Chief helmet. And they would drive out to the middle of the field. And I'm pretty sure I remember the Raider one, too. That big game, like, I remember sitting there watching that.
What one of the four Super Bowls, what one meant the most to you as a fan?
Probably the one, probably Favre. Probably that one because it had been so long. And then the first two, you know, I was too little to even know what they were other than the Packers were in the championship. But you have no recollection of what those really were. And then I distinctly remember the Rodgers one when you were crying or broke down and you couldn't even watch it. Like it wasn't even enjoyable for you.
Well,
I think that was the one. Like we're watching the game and you're not even enjoying the moment because you're just afraid they were going to blow it.
You were at the JRs for that?
Yeah, we were all there together.
Oh, I remember the Falcons game. You were there.
Yeah, we were at that one too.
You weren't there for the Bears, were you?
I don't remember.
God, yeah, I must have blacked out then. Like not from alcohol, but from like the sheer emotion of it. I had to work it the next day. That sucked.
Right. Right.
You know, I don't know, because I remember 96 was at Grandpa's. We watched it at Grandpa's.
Yeah. That's right.
And I that meant a lot because it was like, wow, this can happen. But then, yeah, I think in 96 it was more joy. And then in 2010 it was more just, please, I don't.
Relief, yeah.
Yeah, I'd rather not. Yeah, I'd rather not want, you know what I mean? I'd rather not. I can't even say it. I'd rather not see them lose a Super Bowl than I would see them win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, I get that. I get it.
You think they'll be good this year or no?
I do. I really do. I know that there's been some goofy stories out there. You know, they're trying to, and I think it's just people writing garbage about trying to cause some concern about Rodgers and LaFleur. But I think they've, what they've done with the defense over the last couple of years and getting these young guys. And then I think the defense is going to be really good this year. And I think we had the pieces on offense. I just think I like Mike McCarthy and give him a lot of credit for what he did, but he just stayed a little too long. And then the last two years were just painful, and I don't think everybody was on the same page.
These guys that write that garbage, Dad, I have on my show, should I tell them next time that my dad thinks you're writing garbage?
I think when they're making stories about, like, when they're, you know, I don't know what kind of factual information they have, but when you're, sometimes I think that people are writing stories so that, like,
I think they're right what they get told.
They probably get right. Yeah, but so, I don't think there's a problem. I don't think there's a problem in Green Bay.
There was.
No, I mean right now with Matt.
Oh, no. Right now that was a quote that got taken out of context.
Yeah, and then they write these stories on it, and all of a sudden it's like a...
But like the article with McCarthy and Rodgers hating each other, I buy that every word that was printed.
No, I agree with that. Like I said, I think that McCarthy stayed a little bit too long. You know, I've read, the only person that's disproved this is Belichick, and maybe now Sean Payton's getting into the, isn't he into his 13th or 14th year with the Saints? But they say that at that level, at the professional level, like 10 years, it's 10 years. And then after 10 years, like, it's hard to continue like this story, the whatever your theme is, whatever your mantra is or whatever. It's hard to keep that going, and Belichick is the only one that's really been able to get past that 10 years and be successful as a coach. And I think, you know, Mike McCarthy stayed just a little too long, and it and I don't think he was willing to make adjustments, and whatever. I just think that we're in a good place. I really think there are some people that are saying the Packers are going to be 13-3, and I think those people are pretty close. I'm not kidding. I don't think there's other people that are saying the Packers.
I put 10-6.
Okay, I can go with anything 10-6 and above, but these people that think they're like 500.
I think they're going to get smoked in week one to the Bears, and I think they're going to lose. I think they're going to go about 5-5 again before the bye, and then they're going to say, Rodgers, you got a catchphrase? And he's going to be like, I don't have a catchphrase. And then the catchphrase is going to be, I don't have a catchphrase. Then they're going to rattle off 5 in a row. They'll win the North because the division's going to suck, and they'll get like the 3 seed or the 4 seed. And they'll get a home game, and then maybe they get bounced in the divisional round. But it will be a competitive, fun season, I think.
Yeah.
Super Bowl.
I don't know. Yeah. Do I think Super Bowl? I think they're going to get. Think they're going to get deeper in the playoffs than they've been for a long time. Super Bowl is like, will everybody stay healthy? If Rodgers stays healthy this year, I think he's going to have a chip on his shoulder, and I think he's going to go crazy. I really do. I think he's going to light it up. As long as he can stay healthy. If he gets hurt, then, you know, all bets are off. But I'm liking their chances this year. I think I agree with you. I think it's going to be a fun season. I don't think they're going to be 5-5 to start the season out. I think they're going to be a lot better than that.
Dad, thanks. This will be a nice conversation someday for my kid to listen to. And if he doesn't, then I have failed as a father.
No, you can never say that. You know, you just got to support whatever interest they pursue. But believe me, he's going to be a little Packer fan.
Wink Thanks Podcast. Thanks, Dan.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
With the new iPhone SE for less than $100 at Metro, you rule. It's the most affordable iPhone on the number one brand in prepaid. So whether you're studying online or FaceTiming.
Hey, Mom.
Hi, dear.
The iPhone SE has all you need. Switch to Metro and get the iPhone SE for $99.99 after rebate redemption and 6 months of service with AutoPay. Metro by T-Mobile. Rule your day. Limit 1 per account/household. Requires port and ID validation. Not valid for numbers currently on the T-Mobile network or active on Metro in past 90 days. Restrictions apply. See store for details.